Today, compelling evidence about bank branch closures. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, today, the 1st of December 2023, there was a public hearing in Canberra, and the Senate Rural and Regional Affairs and Transport References Committee took evidence from a number of parties relating to the question of bank branch closures. And what's interesting is that many of the issues, of course, broadened out into questions of competition and also to what extent banks have the decks stacked in their favour. So what I'm going to do today and over the next few days is to release a series of videos where I've extracted particular pieces of evidence. I'm going to start with evidence from the Licensed Post Office Group, which of course are small business operators running across the country. And it also contains some economic information.
I now welcome representatives from the LPO Group, and I think some are appearing by video conference, as well as Ms. Cramp in the room, and also representatives from Per Capita. I understand that information on parliamentary privilege and the protection of witnesses has been provided to you all. And for the record, could you please state your full names and the capacity in which you appear? We might start with you, Mr. Etherington.
Good morning, Senator. Thank you very much. My name's Scott Etherington. I'm the Chair of the Licensed Post Office Group.
Thank you.
And my name's Angela Cramp. I'm the Executive Director of the Licensed Post Office Group.
Thank you. Now, as I've mentioned, I think we do have opening. I've seen some opening statements from yourselves, but I'm happy to give you a short period to provide an opening statement. Does anyone want to go first?
If I may,
Mr. Evans, you can go first.
Appreciate that very much. We have submitted our full opening statement, but I've got a brief one. I would appreciate if we wouldn't mind.
Summary of that, that'd be great.
Thank you very much for inviting us to discuss the submission. We represent the small business owners of Australia Post Licensed Post Offices, the largest retail network in Australia. Where the small businesses left when the government-backed multi-billion-dollar banks have deserted our communities to focus on maximising their profits at their customers' expense. Three of the majors, the CBA, Westpac and NAB, pay us a small fee when we do a transaction for their customers, and for that we thank them. But the ANZ Bank refuses even to do that, to pay less than 0.05% of their profits to be part of Banco Post. While we might be paid to do some transactions, we don't get paid for helping their customers deal with the bank scam text messages, to get an account balance, to count the thousands of dollars of change from their school canteens and the community fundraising events. We don't get paid for those. The bank won't let you deposit money into a BSB or a BSB bank account for your child or someone else. They won't let you make large cash deposits because you just sold your car or your caravan. But we do those things for our other providers in our post offices today, but the banks won't let us do it for them. To top it off, the banks charge their customers extra fees when they dare to do a banking transaction at a post office. And when the CEOs of Australia's largest banks sit in front of you and tell you it's okay that they're closing their branches and leaving our communities because Angela and I and the owners and operators of all the other post offices are still there to serve their customers, what do we receive to represent them? Nothing. These same banks making billions of dollars of profit every year refuse to cover any of the costs for us to be there to serve their customers. We want to be there to serve our communities, but we also want to receive a fair payment for doing it. And that will only happen if you and your colleagues in this building make these financial institutions pay the actual cost of representing them in their customers' communities. Our members are small businesses. We can't pay our staff with goodwill. Our suppliers won't accept gratitude for payment for our insurance or our electricity. Our landlords want more than our thanks. We've spent years asking Australia's biggest banks simply to cover our costs for us to serve their customers, and they refuse. Waiting for their sense of community obligation to convince them to do what is right has failed. In that time, we have seen post offices close their doors because their small business couldn't keep subsidising the banks. How much longer should our members continue subsidising the banks? These bankers are not clever businessmen, they're bullies. We need you, the people who represent the bank's customers and our members, to change the rules. Change the rules so the local community post offices that are serving the customers of the banks are paid properly. Paid properly to serve your family and constituents every day. We've come here today to seek your support and make change happen. Thank you for inviting us here today, and we look forward to answering your questions.
Thanks, Mr. Irving, and thanks for keeping well within the time limits. Ms. Dawson, did you have a brief opening statement as well?
Yes, I'll keep it brief, Chair.
Great, thank you.
My name's Emma Dawson. I'm Executive Director of Per Capita, which is an independent public policy think tank. And we'd go further than the LPO group just did. The Banking Royal Commission almost 5 years ago now found that many Australians didn't have adequate access to basic financial services, and even those who did are often ill-served by existing financial institutions. And this problem is particularly acute in regional and rural communities. Just as we would not leave the creation and maintenance of our health system or our roads entirely in private hands, we should not leave our banking services, financial infrastructure and financial stability entirely in private hands. The establishment of a public bank within Australia Post, a postal banking service, would, by operating within the existing infrastructure footprint of Australia Post outlets nationwide, provide banking services to Australians who are currently underserviced by the existing banking sector. With a social benefit mandate, such a bank could also improve banking services across the country by setting new standards for financial products and services that other banks will have to meet if they are to compete. Moreover, Postbank could ensure the continuation of postal services in remote and regional communities and underpin the ongoing viability of Australia Post services across the country. We propose a phased approach, which would begin with the opening of basic savings and transaction accounts in Postbank, followed by credit cards and personal loans, and then the introduction of mortgages, and I'll speak to that a little bit later as well. We do believe that there's a good opportunity for a postal bank to offer longer fixed rate mortgages, which would alleviate some of the pressure brought to bear on households in times of volatile interest rate settings, such as we're seeing at the moment. A phased approach would allow a steady, staged rollout of new services, with profits and capital from one stage of the rollout funding the rollout of the next phase, and that would therefore minimise initial capital requirements from the public purse. A government-owned bank offers many benefits to Australians, including improving services for those currently underbanked customers, especially, as I said, in rural and regional areas, improving standards across the financial services industry, and providing stability to Australia's economy in times of volatility in international financial markets. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dawson. Thanks for both of you for being very succinct, and but still there's some very important information there. I might just start with the LPO group briefly before handing off to other senators. I take from your evidence that you don't think the current Bank at Post deals negotiated by Australia Post with the major banks have been fair for post offices. Do you think that's a failing then of Australia Post not to negotiate a good enough deal?
Well, certainly a negotiation's a two-way street, but the balance is not particularly balanced at all, actually. You've got banks who basically can hold the line and refuse to make any change. There's no incentive for any of their customers to move anywhere else because they're equally badly served by all their banks. So what's is in their interest to make any sort of deal with them? So the Australia Post have been in consultation with these guys. Our executive leadership team have told us that. For many, many years they've been talking to these banks for a long time and no traction at all. And if anything, they kept walking back the agreements they've had with us previously so that the agreement we have today is not as good as the agreements we've had in the past. And even then, that agreement we had in the past didn't cover the cost of us physically being in the locations that we're at.
I mean, I suppose I would just play devil's advocate. The incentive for the banks is to still be able to provide access to financial services to their customers over a wider footprint, indeed a wider footprint than they've ever had, because you've got many more post offices than branches even before all these closures and what have you. So, I mean, are you saying that there's just simply... If you're saying there's no incentives for the banks to negotiate with you, are you saying that there's not actually a commercial, mutually beneficial deal here to be done between the banks and the post offices? It's just under no arrangements, no fee structure. Would there actually be a benefit to the banks?
It's hard to imagine the banks' interests in trying to serve their customers when they are actively closing their branches today. So they currently serve their customers and they're reducing that service to their customers. So I fail to see where they're incentivised or keen to try and re-service these customers that they've been openly walking away from.
Well, the idea would be you could provide a service at a lower cost than what they could.
Absolutely.
I'm worried here that if you're saying that this is not a commercial venture, how are we going to provide these services long term? Is there going to have to be some kind of government mandate or enforcement?
If I can ask you anything,
we would suggest we go back to the 2018 model where there was a community access payment. it was on top of the transaction fees. That seems to have gone by the wayside.
That was from the banks, was it? Or
the banks paid, you know, it's well documented that the original Bank at Post agreement that was, you know, put in place by Christine Holgate actually had a provision where the banks, the three major banks who signed up for it, paid an additional fee to have access to the community network, whether their customers used it or not. We're suggesting that that must be part of a levy or something.
Just to be clear for me, this is like it was a two-part tariff, if you like. There was a fixed fee paid or potentially paid, and then a service fee based on transactions.
Yes.
And now it's just a service fee based on transactions.
We have no visibility of the current contracts because Australia Post is keeping them commercial in confidence. All the banks have agreed to.
But you certainly don't get paid a fixed fee.
We still get paid the fees.
When a transaction occurs, we get paid to do that transaction.
You don't get paid
any other time.
A flat fee to just remain open, so to speak, available.
We don't get paid a fee to if someone does a banking inquiry, we don't get paid for that.
I mean, I'm just trying to make the point that what would be good here is if we can get to mutually beneficial commercial outcomes, right? And as you say, negotiations are two-way street, business is a two-way street, so you've got to be able to show to the banks that, hey, we can do something for you, we can actually provide a service to customers, your customers, at a lower cost. That would be the best world. Otherwise, we're in a world where the government has to intervene. Do you, just quickly before I move to, and I've got lots more questions, but I'm going to have to move on to other senators. Do you think we should set up a government bank where using post offices? What's your view on that?
I think the opportunity for Australia Post to leverage the network that we have, and for the government to provide banking services to communities that. It's not profitable for these banks. They're not interested in serving a certain segment of the community that doesn't make them any money. And those customers could be served by a government bank. We'd be absolutely supportive of a government bank and using the Australia Post network as its agency to provide the services, face-to-face services. We think that would be an excellent solution.
Okay. Might just use that segue to go to Ms. Dawson on Kiwi Bank. You've got some information in your submission on that. It would seem from your submission that it makes a profit at least. It might not be as sizable profits as our big banks by the look of it, but can you give some further details on the services Kiwi Bank provides and its viability over the last... It's only been going for two decades or so, I believe.
It has, yes. So it has about 800,000 customers, Kiwi Bank, in New Zealand, about 1,000 employees. And yes, it runs at a profit consistently. A $27 million profit in 2020 was the last figures we have. It offers basic retail banking services and a full
suite. Can I just stop you there? I was trying. Well, 800,000 customers. Do you know what market share that is, or maybe you could take that on notice?
I can take that on notice.
Okay, right. Thanks.
The number of households is the relevant, just the population.
It would be a sizeable amount, I'd say. But I just
it is a sizeable amount, yes. And it's not the only country with government banking services through post offices. There's Post Office Money in the UK, Banque Postale in France, and there's a Banca Poster, I think it's called, in Italy. So this is not a radical idea. There are many countries that offer publicly backed banking services through the postal network.
Right. And just quickly on the services Kiwi Bank provides, roughly?
I'd have to get very up-to-date information for you. There have been a few changes to Kiwi Bank in the years since we did the detailed assessment, but it was established, well over 100 years ago and then was split from the New Zealand Post Office in the 1980s. It offers services such as I said, retail banking, savings accounts, mortgages and personal loans. And it really does have a particular focus on serving low-income people from low-income backgrounds, and it has a strong representation amongst the farming community too.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Dawson. I'll go to Senator Roberts.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for appearing again today. So you've got the largest business network. That was something that I should have taken assumed, but I didn't know, so thank you for
retail
that.
Retail network, yes.
Retail network. and you support a postal bank. As opposed to bank at post, you want to go beyond that and set up a proper
government-backed bank Served through the post offices, yes.
And you can see the lack of competition that I saw when I chaired the Senate Select Inquiry into lending to primary production customers. The big four banks seem to have identical services, identical strategies, identical products, and they don't really have to compete because it seems like an oligopoly. In fact, with their common ownership and controlling interests from BlackRock and Vanguard and so on, it would seem to be their one bank behind four logos.
It feels that way sometimes. Okay.
What about security of a full bank? How would you look after security?
That's been put forward a number of times by people about why apparently we can't do this banking transactions. We have been doing banking transactions for 100 years. And recently, with the banks that have closed in our area, we were turning over and doing more banking transactions than the actual bank outlets were doing. To be a bank, to be a post office, we've got duress alarms, we've got time lock cash containers, we've got double lock safes, we've got all those sorts of things, and we currently transact more cash than many bank branches today. So I think that point is moot, and any additional security required is not an impediment to making it happen.
So you're not talking about being skimpy, you're talking about making a proper bank, full security.
We have the ability to do those sort of things that we do today. And if you walk into a retail bank today, in one of these modern, done-up banks, you're often standing next to the teller and you're looking into the same cash drawer. When you come into my post office, you're standing on the other side of a 1.2-metre counter and there is a screen between you and me. If you want to compare security, I think the security is significantly better where I'm standing than when I'm standing in a bank branch.
Okay, thank you. Banks say they do banking at post office, but they impose restrictions and they expect you to do work for nothing. Is that
absolutely
right?
So, for instance, we only provide a fraction of the services you can access in an ATM machine. So the sort of things that you can do in an ATM, many of them you can't do in our outlet. The cash limits that you have access to in an ATM, you don't have access to in our post offices. If you want to make a deposit into a BSB or account number, which you can do at a bank branch, you can't do that with us. There are lots of transactions that you can't do. If you want to just inquire about your bank balance, well, you don't get paid. If you want to come in, put your card in, put your PIN in, I stand there and I have to do the transactions at my end too, then I print out a receipt with your balance on it, and which I've paid for the receipt, and I give that to you. I receive no payment from the banks to do that.
And also, I've been told, and being in regional towns, small towns, that a lot of older people do their banking at the LPO, the Licensed Post Office, rather than the bank.
Absolutely.
And why is that?
These customers, they're terrified of the digital. We're having to do things digitally. Every day they get these text messages from people they've never heard of, telling them they owe a bill, they have to pay this amount. We have customers that we know that have had to do these things and been forced online to use digital transactions. One particular customer at an outlet had to make a deposit on a home, $400,000, which he was forced to do digitally, and was caught up in an invoice scam, and that went off to someone else, not the proper recipient of that, because this guy was having to do this digitally. And that, because of all this, and it's in the news, they come to us, they know our face, they know who we are, they feel comfortable doing these banking transactions with these people who don't have enormous resources, and they count every cent and every dollar. They can't afford for $5 or $10 or even, you know, $1,000, heaven forbid, to go astray because they hit the wrong button on their phone or hit the wrong thing on their web browser.
So one of the things I've noticed from the banks is that they only log an interaction with a customer if it happens to be through a computer. They
yes.
don't capture a lot of the other visits from customers. Do you people capture them? Do you capture the time when a person walks through the door, just has a chat, gets some information and leaves?
Absolutely not. That's not tracked. That's not a transaction as per the Bank of Post Agreement. There's no payment for us to do that. They come in and make an inquiry. They come in, realise they've left their cards at home, or they want to make a deposit. We tell them you can't do that sort of transaction. They go to make a deposit. They've hit their cash limit, not their cash limit, the post office's imposed Australia, you know, by the bank's cash limit, and they walk away. We don't get paid for any of those transactions.
So do you record any of the post at bank, but other interactions with customers?
No, there's no facility to do that.
Okay. So I also understand from my interactions with the post office and customers in post offices, regional towns, and also suburban metropolitan branches where we've got LPOs, that people don't trust banks, but they do trust the local post office. Is that a fair comment?
I think they have a longer relationship. In country towns sometimes, I mean, you've got a longer relationship with your post office manager than you do maybe the new teller that's standing in the window. I think some people might have a better relationship with
their post office. The days of bank manager are gone.
The bank managers aren't there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why is Australia Post not embracing bank closures as an opportunity? Because, now, let me just go back a bit. I entered the Senate prior to Christine Holgate, and the relationship with the LPOs was not good. It was poor. I then saw what Christine Holgate did, and I was pretty impressed, and so much so that I expressed my regrets for sidelining her, but she did a very good job of listening to people. How's Australia Post going with that regard, listening to the LPOs? And it seems to be that Australia Post is not embracing the bank closures as an opportunity.
We, LPO Group, meet with the leadership team of the Australia Post regularly, and we have a good conversations and interactions with them. We look forward to them realising the value of the retail footprint that we have and recognising the economic benefits that they can realise out of that network. We hope to see some progress on that. We've yet to see any progress on that, but we're hopeful that will come soon.
We've heard the concept of points of presence in the banking industry. What does that mean to you?
At the moment, Australia Post is required to maintain a certain number of post offices, and that's physical outlets with people standing in them that you can help talk to you. If that definition was changed to a point of presence, then that point of presence could, for argument's sake, be a bank of parcel lockers and some vending machines. And if Australia Post was able to call their post offices points of presence, you may see them reduce the actual physical presence of people to talk to in these local communities and replace them with vending machines and parcel lockers.
That'd be like a Coles checkout.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, last question. Excuse me. I understand that Australia Post said that there are currently 4,300 post offices.
Give or take.
And in the future, I don't know what year, that will be whittled down to 1,400. Is that correct? Have you been told that?
We've had discussions about closures, and numbers like that have been mentioned to us.
So that's cutting it by two-thirds?
It would seem.
And yet the post office is a key, even more important than banks in most towns.
Basically, if a post office isn't in a town, the town slowly dies.
Okay. The town's what?
The town will slowly die if a post office is gone.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Senator Roberts. I'll go to Senator Rennick.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question to Ms. Cramp and Mr. Etherington is, how do you think that an LPO would be able to provide all the necessary banking services? I'm in favour of public bank as well, but I'm not really in favour of having life franchisees, because I just don't know how you could possibly offer all the banking services that a bank does on top of post office services. Do you think that a licensee can offer all the bank services as well as the post office services?
We would not be physically doing that. We would be enabling people to contact the back office. We envisage we would be the front counter. Like, if you're going to a bank to get a loan, you come to the front counter and then you are taken to some other area. We can capture a barcode and send it off.
How are you going? If you're in a small country town and you're a post office, how could you possibly offer loans for all the different banks? How's that going?
We do not envisage we would be... we would facilitate the connection with a loans department with the bank that is, you know, the postal bank.
Right.
We are envisaging that our role would be to provide you with a new PIN, to change and update your signature. There's stuff we already do today. Like, we do a lot of ID.
I've been told that some post office offices can't change pins.
We can't.
No, others can. No, that's not a facility we provide at all. We're not allowed to.
So you're saying you're going to be able to do that or not?
There's no physical reason why we couldn't enable such. If we had that option for the banks, we'd absolutely be able to provide a PIN. Or you wanted to update a signature for your account. Or you wanted to add an account holder to your authority, something like that. You have to provide some documentation and as proof for something. We do that today for other vendors. We don't do it for the banks. We already do many of these facilities. making a deposit to a BSB and account number. We do those in our post offices today,
okay.
Just not for banks.
Right.
They won't let us do that.
Yeah. Okay. No worries. So, so when you say you wanted the change to happen, what can you be more specific about that? You said in your opening statement you wanted to see changes happen. What exactly do you want to see happen?
A banking levy.
We want a levy imposed on the banks on the obligation when they get a banking licence.
Yeah.
And there's a levy paid, and that levy goes towards their customer representation in their communities, where their customers live, because they're choosing not to be there.
Yeah.
And to pay us to be there to represent them to their customers and serve their customers.
So at the moment, with your current banking licence, are the franchisees actually making money on the banking transactions, or are they just covering costs?
We get paid to do a transaction, so that time is paid for, but anything else is not covered at all. There's
right.
nothing covering our costs of the rent or the electricity or the insurance or the staff who was there before you got here to do your banking transaction and was there after you left. We're not this rubberised building where we sort of expand and all of a sudden we're here and now we don't need to be here. We're there 24/7, whether you're doing a bank transaction or not. And so these banks want us to represent them, but they don't want us to cover the costs of actually physically being...
Yeah, so that's my question. Are you saying they're not covering the costs? Yes
no,
or no?
They're not giving us any community representation allowance at all.
Okay, so and this is slightly different to keeping branches open, but just in regards to the LPO/post office agreement with the banks, how is it that you're not... Who negotiates on the licensee's behalf with the banks?
The leadership team of Australia Post.
Right, okay. And at the moment... The licensees are not making a profit on the banking services they provide?
No.
Okay.
Some licensees maybe if they have high volumes.
Right.
But if you have 10 banking transactions a day, you're there for 8 hours.
Yeah.
10 banking transactions will not cover 15 minutes of the cost to be there for 8 hours.
If you're next to 3 or 4 schools and every day those canteens come in and you get $10,000 worth of 2-cent pieces and 5-cent pieces to count.
Yeah.
No one's covering the cost of you doing that every single day to get that counted and moved out of the
okay.
place, right?
Thank you. That's all I need to know. Thanks,
Chair. Thanks, Senator Nick. Senator Brookman.
Thank you, Chair. And sorry, I did miss your opening statement, so I do apologise if anything covers the same ground. And I will be pretty brief because I'm sure the Chair wants to stay to the program. It's got a very busy day. You mentioned, Mr Etherington, that the physical requirements of storing money, safes, double lock safes, security, etc., were already in place. Is that universal across the network, though? Because I'm pretty sure we got evidence in Western Australia that said that a particular bank at post location felt a little bit uncertain about whether their facilities were actually up to scratch. So how universal are you, in your view, that the physical facilities are actually up to scratch, or does there need to be investment in that regard if Australia was to go down this kind of approach?
I might defer to Angela to that one.
So when the original bank at post agreement was enacted by Christine Holgate, there was a survey of every outlet around Australia and all the security requirements were surveyed, and any areas where there was a lack that they were corrected by Australia Post and the banking contribution at that time. Now, there may be people, there might be a few LPOs where Armour Guard no longer goes to that town, and that does cause problems. But generally speaking, I would think 95% of LPOs around the country have time locked. Well, I think we all have time locked.
Yes, so.
We have, 2 key safes that Armour Guard clear. We have provision to be secure.
Yes.
Everyone can improve the security, but the core necessity of security and securing the money was surveyed in 2018, possibly by 20. And corrections were made to many outlets to make sure that they were compliant.
Did you have any visibility, and I can ask Australia Post this later on, but did you have any visibility about the capital expenditure that was required to get the postal network, the the branch network up to scratch in that regard? Like, are we talking...
We always did banking. So there was not...
So there wasn't
huge... anything like...
Okay.
This was a new transaction. What NAB and CommBank had been using Australia Post for years.
Yes.
Westpac came on board, but it was actually a wider... You know, they're telling their customers they're leaving and they put a sign on the door saying, go to the post office. That was a problem initially until everybody worked out how to manage that influx of traffic. Mm. But I, you know, the Post Plus was the contribution from the banks in that original agreement has upgraded our point of sales system, which is now being rolled out across the country, which will improve our systems immensely, apparently. We're yet to see it. We've seen samples of it. But that will allow far more transactions, quicker. It's upgraded the bandwidth at every outlet. So that is in place, and it was funded by those original Banker Post contracts.
How about the people side? What training do you receive in terms of using those sort of systems, and whose responsibility is that?
We have training requirements every year.
Out the wazoo. We've got significant online training. We've got recurring training. We've got systems in place so that if someone is not current on their training, they can no longer interact with the point of sale machine. So there's significant training programs in place. They're upgraded, and our staff participate in them all the time and are required to just do the work that they do today. So there's a significant amount of that.
And that was also put in place with the original Banker Post contracts. Like this, the training requirements were uplifted, and it is ongoing.
Great. Right.
We are very well trained.
And finally then, and it's pretty clear, but the appetite for embracing more and a more thorough banking service across the Australia Post regional network particularly.
There's two parts of that. We're absolutely keen to serve the customers in our communities, and we want to be those people to serve them. But we're only keen to do the work that we're properly paid for.
That's fair enough.
Like, we want our communities served and serviced, but we also need to be paid. So if you said, are we keen to receive payment to do these services and to serve our communities? 100%.
Yep. Great. Thank you, Chair.
Senator Stirl.
Real quick. Thanks, Chair. Look, Mr. Everington, your opening statement says it all. Okay, all my questions have been covered and asked. But I just say, look, it's a no-brainer. You're prepared to do everything you need. You're in the community. Your roots are in the communities. Your kids go to school. You know the local mechanic. You've got the house. You haven't got someone coming from Sydney and Melbourne thinking I'll do 12 months just to get a promotion, get the hell out of there, and if they can get me home, even better. No-brainer. Good on you. And it's just typical of corporate Australia now, and these banks, I tell you, I'm no friend of the banks, made it very clearly, but they are absolutely a disgrace to our nation to think that they can treat rural people like this. But I have that problem with corporations all through Australia when they don't want to pay people for the effort they're putting in. That's a statement.
It's not just rural, and if there's anything that we can do to help you with this, we'll be there.
We're talking rural here.
Absolutely, we are in this particular case.
Don't worry, I don't like the banks here in the cities either.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Stirl. And look, I know we're pushing over this time, but I'm just very mindful that Ms. Dawson has provided us one of the more comprehensive and very useful submissions to our committee, and unfortunately hasn't had much attention just yet. So I might just finish with another question. And while I do think the submission is excellent, I'm going to pick an area where I slightly disagree or are concerned about. On page 6 of your submission, Ms. Dawson, you say that in reference to a government bank that it could mandate lending practices that are both financially and environmentally sustainable. I mean, I'm just concerned. This is one of my criticisms of the banks right now, is that they're playing politics with banking, and there are many businesses in my electorate in Central Queensland that can't get basic banking services, and I'm talking about basic hedging type of contracts, certainly loans, these types of things, overdrafts, because they're exposed to the coal industry. It just happens to be the country's biggest export and massive contributor to this place, but it can't get a banking loan. So I'm just worried, are you sure that this is the right approach? Because if we have a government bank that plays politics, if you like, and contentious, it won't be stable because it will get buffeted then by the changes in governments and elections. I'm worried about that.
I wouldn't suggest that a government bank should play politics at all, Senator, and I think that that's the critical point is, obviously, we suggest in our submission that a government bank could be mandated to do certain things. It could be mandated by the government of the day to either, in my view, it should have regulations that promote sustainable lending practices but also support the environment. But if the government of the day decided to mandate that that bank must lend to all businesses regardless of their activity, then it could do that too. The point of a public bank is its activities would be under the control of the parliament on behalf of the people. It would be able to resist some of the more commercial imperatives. It could take greater risks because it has a long-term backing of the government. In the home mortgage market, for example, it could offer longer fixed-term loans to people. It could offer products that were in line with the government's industrial priorities. So the government of the day could regulate a government bank with any kind of mandate that it saw fit.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. And maybe just on notice too, if I'm intrigued by the New Zealand situation, I've already asked the Secretary maybe to follow up with some potential submitters, witnesses from there. So if you have any ideas that you know of, please feel free to forward them to us. Our committee has been extended to next year. And look, with indulgence, we're going a little bit over, but I did want to ask the LPO group two quick questions. Number one, do you get any cooperation from the banks when they're going to close, and particularly when they're going to be close the last branch? Do they actually talk to the post office about, hey, what have you got in place? How can you help serve customers? Number one. And the second question is, I've heard rumours about the Australia Post closing branches. What's the status of that, and have you heard the same?
So, particularly in small communities, everyone knows everyone. In my experience, the banks, the staff of the banks come and interact with the post offices and let them know. They also put in places, you know, help their customers that they're going to be impacted the most and try to ease that transition. That is certainly okay. The case. There are other examples, of course, when the first thing the post office heard's about it when they go down to bank themselves and find the bank closed. So there are variations, but by and large...
But that indicates there's nothing really official then. It's done at a local level.
It feels on a local level, yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah. As to the closures, there is an announced program that the Australia Post has already come to the network with. And I identified areas that are over-serviced by post offices and have invited people to voluntarily submit their post office for consideration to receive...
Is that public?
I believe it's public,
okay,
yes.
Right. We'll ask them later. Okay.
Yep.
Have you got any particular issues or concerns with the approach at the moment?
We worked with the leadership team on that program because we agreed there are certain parts of the country, metropolitan areas, where we might have dozens and dozens of post offices within a few kilometres. You can see three post offices from the one post office.
Okay,
we supported that. We worked hard on the buyback or the offering that they were making. We didn't get to the number that we were hoping for, but the number was certainly improved in the discussions. So we think, by and large...
Are you aware of examples where a post office will shut in a town, where you can't see another post office?
No.
There's none of that.
It's not in rural areas.
Okay, that's probably
they have not. There is
not yet.
Today the program is specifically metro, but it feels very pilotish.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we'll watch this space. All right, thank you very much. If there are no other questions, and I believe at least per capita has taken a question on notice. I just need to check when we're asking for those back. We're asking for those back by Friday the 15th of December, if that's possible. Thank you very much. Thank you you both for your excellent evidence, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Clearly an urgent case for change. Now, in my next show, I'll take you through some further evidence. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.